Okay, Deputy Commissioner Ellison, you were just sort of explaining the difference between the Minneapolis lab contracting out with the BCA and having some scientists there. Do you need any more information on that, Senator Lass? Okay. That is a broader question, I think, about the expansion. Representative Cornish and I think have had discussions about the expansion of labs and whether that is a appropriate capital expenditure by the state when we have the BCA operating and then, in my view, then underfunding it and not having enough scientists becomes a public policy question for a later date. So, Representative Lesch.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not quite clear of what the incentive was for locals to develop these local labs and fund them themselves when, as stated by the BCA, the whole point is to have it go through there. Was the incentive merely an increasing backup back in the day when the labs were originally created? Because I guess, based on Senator Lass's comments, I guess I don't see some unfairness achieved when only certain localities of their own volition are deciding to create and fund their own labs. So is there some incentive that makes it worthwhile for the locals to do that other than increasing backups and delays when they started?
Commissioner Ellison.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch, I think I understand your question. This is an issue where local jurisdictions decide that they want to get into the business of processing DNA evidence, and it is because or do drug testing, and it is because they feel like they can do it more quickly and then not rely on the state lab. So they take that upon themselves to ask their taxpayers for funding to fund their own labs. That would be the short answer.
Okay, then, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, so where's the critical mass of cases then? I mean, clearly Minneapolis decided, St. Paul's decided to have their own lab at one point. Where's the critical mass of cases where typically a local department or a local jurisdiction is going to say, wow, I know we can get it done for free at the BCA, but we're going to have to fund this ourselves just because it's slow. How many cases is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch, I think this really is about local control, and there are some jurisdictions that are interested for a wide variety of reasons to have their own labs. And then, in the case, most recently, a county sheriff came and asked for bonding money to build a lab to serve three different counties, and the legislature was able to accede to that request and provide bonding money. So that they could develop their own laboratory. Hennepin County is interested in having their own laboratory. So it's a local decision. And I don't think that there is a critical mass necessarily.
Representative Cornish.
Well, I was just going to say that getting to the whole point here, I think it's an option that these counties are doing this and putting their own labs. I don't think they would have to. I'd like to back you up to say if we properly funded the BCA, I've always considered that the state lab is a state agency to do the things that they're doing. And when we start down the slippery slope of allowing each little place to have their own kingdom, their own lab, or their own jail, or numerous things like that, then we fall back on the situation that we're in now. So I think if we made it clear that this was a state lab and funded it properly, we wouldn't have some of these problems.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we took that logic to another example, then maybe we shouldn't have local police departments either. We'll just have a state police, and that'll accommodate all of our needs. I'm not uncomfortable having local police departments have their local police departments or their local labs. If they have the will of the public behind them on it, that's their business. But I can certainly understand sometimes the conflict between evidentiary procedures between the state and local areas. But, Senator Cornish, I think you used the word correctly, the option. They have the option of doing it. If they wish to exercise it, that's their game.
Except the only thing is that we've spent a lot of time, and we had a, I'm not sure what the name of that task force or advisory group was, to try to ensure that not every city and county had their own laboratory and training center, because the capital cost for bonding bills is enormous. So,
and
I don't know if you caught any of that, Senator Limmer, but that I was just trying to say that the...
I was mesmerized by Senator Goodwin here.
But this is another discussion, really.
Me too.
That's another discussion also. No Cornish.
And the problem is if they can, they're paying for their own police departments, but they're asking money for us for the labs. I mean, the cities or the counties, when they come to ask us money, if they want to pay for their own lab, fine, but they're coming to us to ask for it to be bonded. So.
Exactly. But that's not the issue of the day here. So maybe we should try to get an explanation of these two systems that are priority. Oh, Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I did want to ask a little bit about the Trunk Highway Fund piece. Deputy Commissioner Ellison, the first I heard was today that increase from the appropriation from the Trunk Highway Fund for the State Patrol toxicology and breath analysis and some of those purposes was being prepared long before the St. Paul situation cropped up. And I understand now from Mr. Jordahl's memo that we might be comparing apples and oranges. Not totally persuaded and really need to understand. But can you just explain in a little more detail, because I don't think we got a lot of detail during our budget hearings, what's driving that increase, A, and then B, tell me a little bit more about the history of the use of the Trunk Highway Fund for BCA lab purposes in light of the fact that there's a specific prohibition in statute that doesn't allow that to happen. And how did that come about in the first place, and how is that allowed to continue to happen even though there's that specific statutory prohibition? Help us unpack that a little bit.
Deputy Commissioner Ellis.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, I'll address the use of trunk highway funds, and then I'm going to ask Mr. Delish to explain the increase in cases or why this request came about. As I stated previously, as far as we can figure, trunk highway funding has been used to fund toxicology related to DWI enforcement for the past 20 years, with the exception of 2006 and 2007. That predated my tenure with the Department of Public Safety, and I don't honestly know how that originally came about. The justification philosophically was that the Minnesota State Patrol patrols the trunk highways. Their salaries are funded through the Trunk Highway Fund. They arrest people for drunk driving on trunk highways. We also take cases, of course, from local police departments and sheriff's offices. It's difficult for us to tell exactly how many of those occur on the Trunk Highway Fund, but the justification was that we're arresting people on trunk highway funds that are found to be drunk and over the legal limit, and those that's what happened. And I think in 2006, which often happens with the legislature, the Trunk Highway Fund was under some stress. So they reduced the funding from the Trunk Highway Fund and increased the funding from the general fund. And then when the reverse happened, the general fund was under stress and the Trunk Highway Fund was a little more secure. There was a specific budget request that we put together under the Pulaney administration to ask that be restored from the Trunk Highway Fund. So that's the justification in the history. I was not aware that there was a law that said that we couldn't use trunk highway funds for this purpose. I don't think MMB was aware because our budget activity is approved by them. I don't know that legislators were aware because our legislative budget proposals go through the legislative process and are approved by legislators. So if we all have to go to the federal prison for misusing funds, maybe we'll all go together and, can read a lot of books. I don't know what to say other than I wasn't aware of that fact.
Mr. Backus has some historical information for us.
Mr. Chair and members, just, you know, we went over this earlier on page R35 of the side-by-side. The statutory section is reproduced, and the House strikes permanently the exclusion on using these funds for BCA lab expenses. But what we've done every year that I can remember, every 2 years, is when we put the other appropriation in our bill, we to spend the money we do spend, the money we've been spending for 29 years that you've mentioned, we've always said notwithstanding that statutory provision. So that's how we've gotten around it in the past, by specifically notwithstanding it.
Mr. Chair and Senator, if I could say, too, we're agnostic in terms of where the funding comes from. So if it would be the will of this committee to switch it to the general fund, that certainly is not something that we would object to. We just want to continue to arrest people for DWI and process the cases and keep people off the road that shouldn't be driving.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I think this language on R35, you know, is interesting, and I think it came about. You know, I'm just to be clear, I'm not pure, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, there's a specific prohibition that came about for a reason. You see that this is in a list of other things for which trunk highway funds are specifically ineligible. I think it was an effort by a not too distant past legislature to curtail the hit on the trunk highway fund. You know, the expression was, you know, trunk highway fund leakage. Senator Arata was really interested in that subject. Senator Murphy, Senator Johnson. I think there's a whole House contingent as well. It's a larger policy discussion about, I mean, this is an attempt, of course, to bring some of those practices in line with the trunk highway purposes or highway purposes that are called for in the Constitution. And I think there was an effort to figure out, okay, what is a stretch in terms of defining a highway purpose and what isn't. And this discussion, I alluded to it in our earlier meeting of this conference committee, really revolves around, you know, we could construe a lot of things as highway purposes. You know, clearly there were things at one point that were considered highway purposes, tourism activities and the like. In this business of state highway patrol activities, going out on patrol, driving around, stopping people from speeding, you know, arresting them, you know, if they're drunk, pretty easy to figure out the nexus there. But then you start getting a little further afield as you start the investigations process, as you start the criminal prosecution process, as you start the court process. This was an attempt to maybe draw that line. We don't need to unpack that whole policy discussion, but it's worth just noting that these funds have been being spent, I guess, with notwithstanding language. I didn't realize that notwithstanding language had been included in those appropriations in the past. And then this year, let's just change the law and just admit what we're doing. There's another one in the transportation bill, and that's around tort claims. We've been breaking the law for years, I guess, on paying tort claims that arise on trunk highways, and we're going to strike that language too because we've been breaking the law. We don't want to go off to the federal prison altogether. So it's a worthy policy discussion that we don't need to have here and now or this year, but you know, trunk highway funds are not ever ending. They're limited and they have specific constitutional restrictions, and you know, we just need to do stuff in the full light of day. This language just kind of slipped in, and we just need to pull it out and shed some light on it and be conscious about what we're doing. That's my speech.
So noted. Any other questions about this? Okay, let's talk about the systems now, the crime reporting system and the criminal history system replacement.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to turn it over to Dana Goetz. She's director of the Minnesota Justice Information System, and she can give you a brief overview.
Goetz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dana Goetz. As Commissioner Ellison said, I'm the director of MNJIS at BCA. You should have received two one-pagers in your packets for each of the systems, and I'm just going to talk about them briefly. and then be available for any questions. The criminal history, the statewide criminal history system is probably one of our most critical systems. It's authorized in statute, and it provides arrest and booking information from local law enforcement agencies. It provides court dispositions, such as convictions, and custody data from corrections agencies. The system is more than just a database, but it provides a lot of automated processing so that to make sure that we're accurately disseminating data, and it produces criminal history reports and background checks. There are many criminal justice purposes for the criminal history system, such as criminal investigations, and if you think of all the decisions made on a daily basis throughout the criminal justice system related to charging, sentencing, releasing, the system is used for those things, but also all the non-criminal justice background checks that it's used for, such as employment, housing, licensing, adoptions, and then firearms checks, which has obviously been a hot topic the past few months. The BCA conducts more than 500,000 checks per year, and law enforcement makes over 2.2 million queries of the system each year. This system is desperately in need of replacement, and it is one of the governor's top budget initiatives. The system is over 20 years old. The technology is very obsolete, and it's difficult to maintain and integrate with other systems. For example, we've been trying to integrate our current criminal history system with the court's new MNSA system for over 7 years, and we just can't make it work. We can't automate certain processes, and it's extremely difficult to make any changes to meet statutory changes or requirements or new business process improvements. The cost is about $11 million over 4 years. And, you know, we just need this for more accurate, timely, and complete criminal history data. If you hear nothing else today, please know that this really is a critical and legitimate need, and it's a system that's foundational to the whole criminal justice system. I don't know if you wanted me to go on to the next one or if you have questions.
Let's see if there's questions about this, the criminal history system first. Apparently not. Okay, so, I guess the... How do you come up with the $11 million figure?
Well, actually, in 2010, I don't know if you're all familiar with the Criminal and Juvenile Justice Information Task Force and Policy Group. The task force is a group of about 35 members of criminal justice discipline, 2 probation officers, 2 judges, 2 chiefs, 2 sheriffs, on and on. And then they report up to the policy group, and the policy group is made up of 4 commissioners, 4 judicial branch members, and the chair and vice chair of the task force. And so this has been a priority of those 2 groups. They oversee statewide integration and systems, and those 2 groups advocated the replacement of these 2 systems as a priority in 2010. So in 2010, MNJIS took on doing some analysis to see what it would cost to replace both of those systems so that we'd be ready to come forward with a budget initiative for this budget session. So the numbers that you see are estimates based on 6 to 12 months of analysis and looking at requirements and what is needed and what would be needed from a technical perspective.
Okay. And do you have those documents that you could share with the committee?
Sure. We have full analysis reports that we've presented to the task force and policy group, and we could definitely provide those to the committee.
Yeah, I would like to see that. Okay. All right. So then the criminal reporting system.
Yes. So that's the second system. It's the statewide system of incident, arrest, and property data, and that's data that's submitted by law enforcement agencies for statistical purposes. In addition to this incident, arrest, and property data that we're required to submit to the FBI, there are other supplemental reports that are required either by the FBI or by state statute, such as law enforcement officers killed or assaulted, homicides, bias crimes, pursuits, firearms discharged, etc. This statistical data is used for managing resources and operational planning at local agency level. It is also used for a lot of other research and crime analysis purposes. And I think this statistical data has really proven to be valuable for crime prevention efforts. Again, this is our second critical system that is in need of replacement. This particular system is over 40 years old. So if you think that's when man first walked on the moon. The technology is obsolete and is no longer supported by the vendor. This system is at risk of failure. We are not able to make any changes to this system to meet FBI or state reporting requirements. With a new system, we really want to move to a more detailed incident-based reporting system so that we can provide even more accurate, timely, and complete crime data. So we estimate, again, through the same process, we did this analysis over 6 to 12 months, it would cost $4.1 million over 3 years. And again, this is one of the governor's top budget priorities.
Okay. No questions? Senator Dibble.
So, Mr. Chair, I've heard repeatedly from the commissioner and the deputy commissioner and others that this is the top priority. I have been sensitive to that, and I agree that this is something we absolutely should do, or at least get a start on. My question has been all along, why from the driver services and why from the vehicle services funds? Because, of course, those are funds that are collected when you renew your driver's license, when you do your title, car title work. And, those funds are fee-based funds that have a specific intent and purpose. Over in the driver and vehicle services division, long ways off from Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Certainly very, very remotely. And I understand there's a bunch of money sitting in there, and I'm curious to know why there's a balance in those accounts. And those funds aren't being utilized for what they're intended, because of course you have prohibitions on that too. Collecting more fees than you need. So that's another question, maybe for another time. And thought I was getting some assurance that we would be thinking creatively about how to find appropriate kinds of funding for this purpose, and haven't heard anything. This is a very worthy and worthwhile general fund expenditure, and expenditure of some of those resources that we raise that are a little closer to some of the stuff that we collect around the criminal justice system. It's all about kind of getting away from past practices and recent years of budgetary practices of raiding funds, of doing shifts, doing gimmicks, using funds. It's money sitting there. I know it's like a sitting duck, and we can use it. I get that. It's a principle that had been articulated by the governor himself about how we're going to be doing our budgets from here on. And it seemed to fly in the face of that principle, and so our committee took a skeptical view of that source, even though we were sympathetic to the goal. So that's why our unofficial position right now doesn't fund this, but we want to figure out a way to do that.
Deputy Commissioner, do you want to shed some light? This was a department decision that we accepted, but we clearly understand the priority also, but this wasn't an internal decision that you made with the governor's office and MMB, as I understand it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me say we really understand this concern and we understand the concern. This is just a brief explanation. Driver and vehicle services, beginning in 2006, began to be funded through the fees that they collect. And the fees that they collect on driver and vehicle transactions are the same fees that are charged by deputy registrars and driver's license agents. And they need to be the same fees, because if we had lower fees at the state, then the local deputy registrars and driver's license agents would lose money to the state. So there's that balance, because the legislature approves the fees that are requested by the deputy registrars and the driver's license agents. And I think there is often a tendency to support that, because these are local businesses, although some of them are cities and counties, but they're local businesses and they're trying to make their ends meet. And so our fee structure is the same. So what happens is that the fees are deposited into either the driver services special revenue account or the vehicle services special revenue account, and they build up. And then the legislature, each biennium, appropriates a certain amount of money to pay for the operations of driver and vehicle services. There are fund balances that build up or, you know, are higher and lower over time. When we submitted our budget proposal to be considered, the idea was presented to us, and the philosophy was, if you want to fund something, find money in your own agency to fund it, because there's going to be stress, continued stress on the general fund. So as we were working with MMB and figuring out what to propose, the idea came about to do a one-time transfer of funds that were in those accounts in order to fund this activity. I would say the only nexus, honestly, is Ms. Goltz just reminded me that criminals drive. And I think that really is the only nexus. And certainly these funds, I understand Senator Dibble's concern. And again, if we could get money somewhere else, that would be great.
Well, you know, this really isn't in our division here, at least on the House side. So will that fund be perpetually having a balance that will be prime for the taking for whatever purpose after this, if we decide to do it this year?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one of the reasons those funds have a larger balance is because of the government shutdown. We pay our salaries through that, and there was a three-week government shutdown, and so there were a lot of salaries that weren't paid. We also request that there be a 10% cushion in those general funds, because driver and vehicle services is a huge operation and there are unintended expenses for all kinds of different activities. So then we don't want to be able to come back and ask the legislature for additional appropriations authority. The other issue that's arisen recently is that MnDOT has turned over the maintenance and management of three driver evaluation facilities around the state. They're separate buildings. If the roof collapses or, you know, the pavement needs to be replaced in the parking lot, then we have to have a certain amount of money set aside. Having said that, the reserves of those funds are transparent. They are made known to through MMB and through the budget process, and certainly legislators, and I would think it would be legislators in the transportation side, would say, you know, here's, you know, if there continue to be reserves, then direct those funds to be used for specific purposes. We certainly would discourage use in the future of these funds for other activities.
Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have, you know, some projects and some other bills, homeless youth, some other stuff. I mean, you know, that's kind of, you know.
They don't drive.
So, well, computer systems don't drive it. So that's, you know, that's my issue. You know, I hope we can avoid doing this. You know, it's my first time out of the gates here as the finance chair. I don't want to start down this path too soon. I mean, who knows what will happen in the future? But you know, we gave a lot of speeches on the floor in the years past about this practice, about doing budgeting in this fashion, and you know, I don't want to have to reflect on some of those speeches that I've given around reaching into funds that are completely unrelated for these purposes. What I really hope we can do is speed up MNLARS. Can we just speed up MNLARS, bring that on before 2017? I keep asking Ms. McCormick if we can do that. She says we can't, but she's, you know. But I'd really like to do.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, that isn't a question of money, actually. And we are going to have a separate, after session, we are committed to having a separate session and invite legislators so we can give you the whole scoop on MNLARS and why it's set up the way it is in terms of its development. So
we don't know what MNLARS is.
No, sorry.
We don't get
that. That's going to replace our whole driver and vehicle services system, you know, our titling, driver's license, all that stuff is similar to this. It's decrepit, broken down, too slow. on the verge of collapse, and they're developing a whole new system that's going to be flexible and speedy and state of the art. And
champion.
But it's a long, slow process of building it from the ground up.
Very good. So, are we? Is there anything else, Commissioner? Did you want to say anything?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I just would like to really reiterate, first of all, thank Deputy Commissioner and Dana Goetz for being here today, but also to reiterate that these systems are in dire need of replacement. We understand the concerns that are brought forward. Excuse me. They are the core function of the criminal justice system, not only law enforcement across the state. They are our key priorities and certainly the priorities of the governor and the discussions that I've had with him. So just thank you for the discussion. Thank you for allowing us the time. And we'll continue to work with you to answer any other questions you might have.
We didn't get into the analytics discussion because we're not, it's in neither bill, so I suspect we can just let that go. I know that's something you would like to do in the future.
Mr. Chair, yes, we will probably be back to have those discussions at another time.
All right. Are there any other questions of the department? Is there any other business before the conference committee? Thank you all for your testimony. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.
Good work, everyone. Good work.